Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are God's, little g. You are God's because you came from God.
When I read in the Bible where he says, I am, I just smile and say, yes, I am too.
God came from heaven, became a man, made man into little gods.
We have the potential and the capacity through a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ to know God, but that does not mean we are God. The Bible is very clear. There is only one God, and he will not share his glory with another.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And we're off.
It's the Wretched Radio mail call delivery bag Q&A infotainment nationwide extravaganza featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Ooh! It's a lovely day in the neighborhood. For what? For sending wretched things to whom? This is Wretched Radio. I'm not aware of anybody else who wants wretched things. So when you find one, would you send it to us? Please, it can be a sermon, a story, an article, anything wretched, idea at wretched.org. And if you want to use that new fandangled technology called the text machine, I believe they call that thing, the texter box, you may do so at 877-282-2337. Okay, so Jimmy.
Yes.
You're just not even going to be shocked at this. So I was trying to listen to Greg Gifford at the gym on whatever day it was this week.
Uh-huh.
So I hit my little Spotify button.
Yeah.
And nothing. It just doesn't happen. And then I keep hitting it because that's what you do when it doesn't work. You just you hit it harder.
That's right.
And it said that I had to sign in with something. And it's like, I don't know how to sign in. So my brilliant solution was I'm going to delete the app. And then I'll go download the app. And then I couldn't figure out how to download the app. So I had to send a text to my kids to say, can you help me download an app? Don't laugh at my malady. I'm telling you, I know that I'm going to be in the DSM-6. It is this technology deficit that I possess. I'm telling you, it's deep. And it's very real. 877-282-2337.
All right. This is a text from Luke. Todd, is it normal or okay for a pastor to spend 5 years in a book? John, the Gospel of John is the one I'm talking about. And only get to chapter 11. Or is that taking it too far and neglecting the rest of the Bible?
Well, can't answer that, at least without a disclaimer. Why? Because there are no preaching laws. There are preaching principles, but you can't make a law and impose it on every single pastor as much as I would like to. Every pastor has a different philosophy of preaching. Some think cover more ground. Others say, no, cover less ground. Who's right? Yep, depends on the pastor, depends on their skill set. It depends on the congregation's attention span and their level of maturity. It depends on the need of the moment. It depends on what they've been preaching through prior and after. So all of those circumstances really can dictate the philosophy of preaching. I can tell you mine, for whatever that's worth. I don't say this text, we are always going to wring every single word out of it. Don't do that. But do we sometimes do that? Yes. On the other hand, I want to be careful that we aren't just skating over the top of too much material. But have we sometimes done that? Yes. Why? Because the text. And so it really depends on the circumstances. Now, this person who wrote in brings up a pretty valid point. I believe the term was, are we neglecting the rest of the Bible? I think that would be on the scale to consider. I think one of the bigger issues, though, that I ponder when it comes to preaching a book of the Bible is, are we losing our way? Are we off scent? Why? Because every author of every book of the Bible has a point that they're trying to make. And they usually tell you either up front or after the fact. So, okay, First John chapter 5, I think it's verse 20. I've written these things so that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, and in believing you might have life. So he tells you at the end of the book, okay, so now what I need to know is, now that I understand that's the point of the book, so that I can know that I believe rightly in Jesus Christ. Now, when I read the book, that's going to inform every single verse. Here's one that is often overlooked. 1 Corinthians It is about so many things. It's about worldly philosophy. It's about marriage. It's about really naughty professing Christians. It's about the Lord's table. So it's got all of those different things in it. But what's the main point of the book? Because if you don't know why the author wrote that letter, you're not going to understand those teachings rightly. So 1 Corinthians, I believe it's sectarianism. Don't be divided. And that theme needs to be kept in view when you're reading the entire book and preaching from every single chapter. Now, if you're doing, say, one sentence at a time, you're probably going to miss the point of the paragraph. And, okay, I shouldn't say probably. It's very easy to lose the point of the paragraph. It's very easier to lose the point of the chapter. And it's even easierest still to miss the point of the book. So a pastor has to weigh all of these things. I think that there's another consideration that needs to be remembered. When the first century church was understanding, when they received these letters, everybody gather around. Paul's written to me. I'm Titus. Sit down, everybody. It's pretty short this time. 3 chapters. They got the whole thing. Bang. Here's the whole thing. So you understood all of it. And you understood the main point. If it takes 10 years to get through Titus, pretty hard to have that point just always front and center, being making that point. Now, I know that there are people who could counter that, and there are very valid arguments. There are books. In fact, I've got a preaching book sitting on my table right now. We never got to this, Jimmy. Remember, I threatened we were going to talk about Mike Fabares' book, Preaching That Changes Lives.
Yep.
I still think it's just kind of like too geeky. Well, you know,
if you don't
have to preach a sermon, you're like, what's the point of that, Todd? Well, the point is, he has a philosophy of preaching. Brian Chappell's book, Preaching That, Christ-Centered Preaching is the name of his book. He has a different philosophy. So it really depends on the philosophy of preaching, all of those issues that need to be weighed. We currently at Alpharetta Bible Church, we're in 1 Peter. We've been there now for 5 months and we're in chapter 2. Now, here's a good example. So we've been pretty detailed, been typically tackling about 3 verses per week because that's the way I see Peter having it blocked. Sometimes there were maybe 5 verses where it's like, there's the big thought and there was an inclusio. So there was something that identified a bookend at the beginning and the end. But now we're getting into the submission section. And this is just a little bit different because his point, when he talks about 4 points of submission. He's talking about everybody submitting to government. He's talking about slaves submitting to masters, wives submitting to husbands, and then husbands submitting likewise, and then how we're all supposed to behave. Those we're going to take those in bigger chunks. So the government section, I think, was like 6 verses. I don't want to break that up and do 3 weeks on government. Now, some pastors will, bless their hearts, but I think that kind of misses the point of it's about submission. It's that we're a submissive people. Yeah, there's exceptions, but we're a submissive people. And so when we do slaves, we're going to be taking all of those verses. And it's just a slightly bigger block. Why? Because to break it up would be to lose the point. And I don't want to miss the mark in that regard. So all that to say, if you got a good pastor and maybe you think that he's spending too long, can you lovingly talk to him about it? You could, but I'd be reticent to do that. If he's faithful to the word and he's bringing it every week, he's pouring himself into it and he's a godly guy, honestly, I would just thank the Lord for a shepherd like that. And I would adjust my expectations rather than seeking to adjust his. Jimmy, you got anything to add to that?
Nope.
There's so much there that could be opened up. But
nope, absolutely, it could be. But I agree with that last statement that you just said. Yeah, if he's a faithful pastor, I would leave it alone. I would venture to say, and I don't know this pastor, but looking at the question, 2 years in 11 chapters, how many times?
Five years.
How many times has he actually stepped away? Because a lot of
pastors, there's that too, in summertime and all that stuff.
Yeah, a lot of pastors will do that. Christmas, all that. They'll move away from that and come back to it.
But even the pastor does need to be aware. I can try my people. And they might, you know, it's like we'd kind of just like to, you know, we don't feel like we're making any progress here. Now, if you happen to be a pastor who labors that long in a particular book, there are some, and a pastor who does that is most likely aware of these dangers, but there are some ditches that you can fall into. And this will try the hearers. And that is, each Sunday, if you're going so deep, in order to reset the table every week, it's 10 or 15 minutes of resetting the table. In other words, you're rehearsing last week's sermon again this week. I personally find that to be a little bit fatiguing and try to avoid that because it's like, we know we were here. Here's another, this is a small one, but this is for pastors who will say something like this. All right, so for those of you who weren't here the last 3 weeks, to those people who weren't here the last 3 weeks, I would say, go listen to the series online, but don't spend 10, 15, 20 minutes reteaching what those people who actually were there to experience. Get to it and make sure if you're going to spend that much time in a particular book of the Bible, don't miss the point that the original author is trying to make to the original audience. Because if you do, well, your folks will learn a lot of details, but they'll miss the point. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Look, here's something that I've noticed, and maybe you have too, but it's really easy for us to treat our faith sometimes like a category. A Sunday is Sunday. Work is work. Parenting is parenting. And somewhere in there, you try to be a Christian, but it doesn't always feel like it's all connected. That's why Dr. John Krotz and his podcast, Integrated, is so incredibly important. Dr. Krotz is a pastor. He's an author. He's a biblical counselor. And he's a Fortis Institute fellow and the host of Integrated. And he is helping people see how Scripture speaks to every part of their life. Not just the spiritual stuff, but the practical, everyday, how do I actually live this stuff out stuff. And if what we're doing at Fortis Institute has been a source of encouragement for you, I want to ask you to consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Help us continue producing content just like Integrated that connects the dots. Go to fortisinstitute.org right now and find out how to join us. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke? Or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
No Retreat. That's the name of Fortis Institute's Spring Match campaign, and we chose that name for a reason. It means something. See, the church has been quietly backing up for years. A doctrine gets uncomfortable, a truth sounds a little bit too exclusive, so we set them aside. And before long, you realize the gospel your church is preaching sounds more like an apology than an announcement. Fortis Institute exists to advance the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, the actual gospel. And right now, through the end of May, every dollar you give to the No Retreat Spring Matching Campaign will be matched dollar for dollar. Our goal is $250,000, and your gift will help launch 2 new podcasts, publish Todd Frill's book, Go Serve Your King, through HarperCollins, build biblical resources the church desperately needs, and fund gospel proclamation on college campuses. The gospel doesn't move backwards, and neither should we. You can find out more right now at fortisinstitute.org/donate.
Know your reformers. John Wycliffe, called the Morning Star of the Reformation, was a professor at Oxford in the 1300s who preached against papal authority in matters of doctrine, politics, and church practice.
After his death, his bones were dug up, burned, and spread over the river.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Tempted, very, very tempted. This is Wretched Radio, but I'm not going to give in to that temptation to press the button so you can hear the dulcet tones of Dr. Erwin Lutzer explain how he prepares a sermon. It's really fascinating. If you're a preacher, I really encourage you, go find Erwin Lutzer, the first one of these series of lectures. They're pretty short. Sermon Prep Made Simpler. I think there's maybe five or six of these, and he spends time on introduction. He spends time on the close, etc. They're super valuable, and you will hear another man's way of tackling text and how much text you tackle. I'm pretty sure, I'm sorry if I'm wrong, Erwin, I think he's a guy who's more of, it's better to cover more ground than less. Typically, not always, typically. But if you're a pastor and you do some preaching, that series might be extremely helpful for you. I am not going to give in to the temptation and talk about that. Instead, I'm going to give in to the command to talk about our spring matching gift campaign. Happy now, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No retreat. We have a matching gift campaign. We would love, love, love it. If you are able at this time, do support us financially. It's a matching gift campaign. Pretty self-explanatory. We have so much we want to do, and I can't tell you much, but this particular subject that we're talking about, preaching and pastors, that's going to be something we do big time in 2027. But I'm not going to give into that temptation and talk about it because I will get my wrist slapped hard. Would you please visit FortisInstitute.org/donate, FortisInstitute.org/donate. And if you can join us right now for our matching gift campaign, we'll be very, very grateful. And then you can call 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Peter. He texted in, Todd, what are your thoughts on American flags in the church sanctuary?
You try to get me into trouble today. Okay, this is how I sort the issue, because I know there's so much emotion behind this, and I know there's a bunch of churches that do that. Do I think that they're horrible sinners? No, I do not. Here's why I would not do it. Because the church is a dedicated sanctuary. It's a dedicated place for the proclamation of the word, the administration of the ordinances, for worship, for praying. That's what this space is set apart for. If you want a condensed version of God's kingdom on earth, it's the assembly of the saints in a local church. Therefore, philosophically, I would not put an American flag in there. It's to confuse what this space is for and what this service is all about. For I think that there's some other, they're down the list for me, but there are some people, if they're foreigners and they're visiting or they're considering joining and they don't know where they stand on where what country they're going to be living in, they could be people who are maybe going to get a message that we're not trying to send to them about, say, Christian nationalism. So for those reasons and more, I just wouldn't do it. I think, could you fly a flag outside of your church? Look, I love America. I really, really do. I said the Pledge of Allegiance in school growing up. Even every day, we even had to sing a patriotic song. God bless America, America the beautiful, the national anthem, every day before school started. So don't hear that I don't love this country, but what I love is the kingdom of our Christ way more, like spectacularly, infinitely more. That doesn't diminish my love for this country. It just means that his kingdom is so much more important. And I want to make sure that a church communicates that his kingdom is preeminent and we're about his business here. Not political stuff, potentially. So, Jimmy.
Yes.
Thanks for choosing that question. how much pain am I going to experience from that?
Look, I don't think you are. I mean, you mentioned outside. I wouldn't have a problem putting the American flag, the state flag, and the Christian flag outside on a flagpole.
In which order?
I don't know. I don't know. But I don't think I would do it in the sanctuary. But outside, yeah, that's where flags go.
All right. What flag goes on top?
Yeah. I'm not answering that.
You know, there's American flag laws. I mean, they're really meticulous. Nobody follows them because most people aren't aware of them. But how you put the flag up, for instance, to put the flag at half mast, it's you don't just put the flag on the, you know, hook it up and then put it up halfway. No, you put it up all the way, then you bring it back down.
Really?
Yeah, there's rules about this and order of flags, like which flag is on top, because it does send a message. And so, again, I love the country, but to put the Christian flag, if you are a fan of such things, underneath the American flag, Now, if the law says you can't put a Christian flag on top of an American flag, then I guess I wouldn't be flying one of those flags. But the church is not subservient to a nation. Christ is the King of all nations, and his flag does not go underneath and submit himself to a national flag. Now, am I going to get in trouble, Jimmy?
I don't think so.
I bet I will. I bet I will. So you can disagree by all means, please. Do you have any disagreements in your pile?
No.
It was a good week. idea@wretched.org, or you can text 877-282-2337.
So I don't have a disagreement. It's someone wanting a clarification.
Fair enough.
This is from Karen. Todd, our church has two deaconesses. We talked about that last week. One is over the children's ministry, which includes the nursery, and the other is over the women's ministry. Were you saying that's not biblical? Just for the record, our church does not have women elders, and that's definitely not biblical, but would you clarify your comments from last week?
Can a woman serve and act like a deacon? Of course. We're all called to serve in the church. Can a woman be? The first one I heard was the Sunday school, the kids' Sunday school.
Over the children's ministry.
Children's ministry.
And over the women's ministry.
Women's ministry. Okay.
And they call them deaconesses.
Yeah. I serve in that capacity as a servant doing that particular function. But because my opinion that the office of deacon is reserved for men, I just wouldn't use that title. Call it something else, anything else that you want to, but we shouldn't be confusing the office of elder, pastor, shepherd, and the office of deacon. We're all called to serve. And I think that's the point that I would like to make the loudest here. If we, in our desire to be good complementarians, make women feel like we don't want them participating or that their service is not as valued as a man's, then we have biffed it as complementarians. We need to make sure that every time we talk about the office of elder and deacon, it is limited to men. We got to be screaming, but lady, we want you involved. We need you involved. That point needs to be made, I think, just as loudly. 877-282-2337.
This is from Josh. He texted in, Todd, when I'm staying in a hotel and I find the Book of Mormon in the bedside drawer, would it be wrong for me to take it and throw it away?
See, here's the problem with that question. If I tell you it would be wrong, that would mean I've been wrong in the past. I'll just tell you how I rationalized it in my mind. The Mormon church, it's probably the Marriott hotels, it's the Marriotts that are the Mormons, right? Marriott's, not the Hiltons, the Marriott chain is Mormon, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So what do they want to do? They want you to take that Bible, just like the Gideons who put Bibles in. They're thrilled when people take them. They provide more Bibles to the hotel so that more people can use the Bible and potentially take them. So in an act of goodwill, I take one. Then when I get home, I ditch it. But I still took it. And so that's how, would I say it's a sin? No. Would I say that it's wise? Over to you, Jimmy.
I don't think it's a gray area at all, because if the intention of the hotel owner is for you to take the Bible, they're not out money. They want you to take the Bible. That's a part of what they're doing. I don't think it's a problem.
So how many of you swiped?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I lost count.
If it were stealing, then of course you shouldn't do it. Like if I were in a Mormon's house, would I swipe their Book of Mormon? No, I wouldn't do that because it's their property. You're right. The intention behind these is to distribute them. So I'm honoring their intention when I'm taking it home to throw it in the garbage. 877-282-2337.
From Carrie, are dead people able to interact with the living? My mother is waiting for a sign from my father, who was just recently deceased.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. The answer to the question about the dead interacting with the living, can things like that happen through necromancy, through divination and sorcery? Yeah, I think so. But it is clearly forbidden and she shouldn't have that expectation. And because she's grieving, one can only imagine, then I guess I would be focusing on how to provide comfort that is biblical and accurate and even better. Because even if her husband reappeared to say something, that is still not as good as the Bible. That's what Peter said. The word is better than viewing a transfiguration of the living Christ. The word is what will be her greatest comfort. This is Wretched Radio.